pale horse. The man who sat on him was death. And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
And welcome to Declarations of War. I'm your host, Alexei of Card, joined by Andy Astronaut.
How's it going?
Levitain.
G'day, g'day.
And Artemis Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
A full cast show. It's been a while since we've all been together.
It's good to be back.
It is indeed. I think, Lave, you are the least recent. Do you want to give an update? How are things going?
Yeah, life is busy in the fight versus COVID-19, but we're keeping strong, we're keeping good, we're continuing to fight the good fight. And yeah, I popped in today and got some kill mails, so win-win.
Yes, it was definitely a great time to show up. We had a rather exciting fleet earlier today, with lots of Lashaks moving around and big fleets dancing around each other. Came out on the upper end of it. We'll talk about it more in a bit. But first, want to, of course, plug Nora Recruitment. Nora is recruiting. In fact, we just picked up two really, really awesome recruits for the European time zone. And, you know, this has been our first campaign with these guys. They've just come in the past 2-3 days. They're fantastic so far. Looking forward to seeing a lot more of them. We also picked up our first corporation in the network. Shout out to Arunmore Corporation. Both the Alliance and the Corps are recruiting. So the Network is recruiting corporations. Noir is recruiting experienced combat pilots. And Noir Academy is recruiting those who want to become experienced combat pilots. Never a better time to join. Really excited about 2020 finally being over and getting our 2021 underway. But, yeah, there's some dark skies on the horizon, potentially, which we'll be talking about. The resource distribution update. This has been a source of much hand-wringing among the NullSec and LowSec communities. Let's Mavel jump
Spar.
Into it. Yeah, Mavel Spar. Trit.
So the biggest changes, I think the best way to summarize it is just the first spreadsheet on the dev blog, which outlines the security zones, the exclusive minerals to those zones, and the excluded minerals from those zones. So the biggest one, at least in the news, the most talked about, is that Tritanium is now exclusively found in HiSec. You can't get it anywhere else. LowSec, you've got exclusively Isogen and Noxium. And then NullSec has exclusively Zydrine, Megasite, and Morphite. There are also exclusions, so you're not going to find various minerals in other areas. This is like both stuff that's exclusive to another zone. So as an example, in NullSec, you're not going to see Tritanium because it's exclusive to HiSec. You're not going to see Noxium because it's exclusive to LowSec, etc. But in LowSec, as an example, like, they basically match up. So it's two different ways of saying exactly the same thing, is what I'm saying. The exception to that is Wormhole Space, that has zero exclusive materials, but you will never find Tritanium, Noxium, or Morphite in Wormhole Space. So that's the thing, and people are not happy about it.
Yeah, this is a big hatchet to...
Gee, I wonder why.
I mean, forget scalpel. This is like chainsaw, except each tooth of the chainsaw is like a machete.
Right, the wormhole guys have been fairly quiet on this because they're used to getting like shafted in pretty much every update, but this is a big one.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised I haven't heard more from wormholers about this.
Nobody like builds in their hole from the stuff that they mine. They just import anyway. So wormholers are already used to just bring in compressed ore and refine if you're going to build something. Like, not a big deal.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Yeah.
It's also worth noting there are a few tweaks to the roids themselves. For instance, you're going to get less out of Veldspar than you did before. So even the HiSec exclusive guys are going to have to work harder to get the same amount of trit.
That said, there are also changes to, like, the distribution of ores in various areas. So HiSec, I think, is the one exception where there's going to be less ore overall. But if you look into LoSec, they're increasing the amount of certain types of ores that are going to be spawning, as well as some changes to the anomalies, which I'll get to in a bit. And then in NullSec, they're actually reducing a lot of the ore quantities, which is amusing. So LoSec is getting a buff to the amount of ore in it. We'll see if anybody actually mines there. And the ore anomalies themselves, none of them are going to be in HiSec. There's going to be more ore in the ore anoms in LoSec. And in Wormhole Space, of course, we already talked about stuff going away.
I just like looking at some of those figures. It says that on low security, the quantity of all variations of Krokite and all low-sec anomalies will be increased by 9,900%. It's just, what does that mean?
It means there wasn't very much at all before, and now there's going to be some.
I find the following interesting. I take a look at Sov ore anomalies. At level 1 and 2, apparently you will get Pyroxeres, which will give it pyrite and some mechs.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. It's not an there's no indication that it should be exclusive, but generally pyrite is considered like a low-end mineral, so you will have a way to get that. But if you do too good at mining, and you get it up past level 2, then it doesn't spawn at all. Which is super odd.
Yeah, it seems to imply that you need kind of like low quantity but high kind of mobility mining fleets moving around an area.
Well, I think what it really implies is there's meant to be sort of like an international capitalist min-maxing going on where you've got NullSec exporting all of their high ends to buy the low ends that HiSec is producing and then import them back. Which is going to get real annoying real fast for any kind of jump freighter type pilots.
Real profitable real fast.
Well, there's opportunity here, particularly for those people who sit between HiSec and NullSec.
I think this may go beyond profit, though. If you think about how much industry is done in NullSec by all the various alliances, to cut that all off, it may be more demand than the haulers can even handle. So there might be like severe shortages, not for minerals necessarily, but just people willing to move them.
I'm fine with this.
I was going to say, I'd be surprised if people didn't take, like if haulers didn't kind of fill the gap there, because I think usually the issue with hauling, right, is if you use a JF, it's the cost of the JF, not necessarily the setting up the route and the sinus and everything. Like, yes, you have jump fatigue, but you can make like 2-3 routes per day if you really wanted to without too much trouble if you have the Sinowalts and everything in place.
There's a big barrier of entry to jump freightering, though. That's at least a 20 bill investment.
Right, but I would say that most groups have at least a couple jump freighter pilots already ready to go.
Yeah, and a couple that can handle their current amount, and they're like probably not happy about how much they have to haul currently.
If you're talking about large alliances, you're talking 100 or maybe a couple hundred. Like, come on now, this is a group of 30,000 players on average for a coalition, right? 20,000 to 30,000. You're telling me you're thinking they only have 5 jump freighter pilots? Nah.
No, I'm yeah. Like, I guess my point is, I don't think that the bottleneck will be jump freighter pilots or jump freighter ability. What I've heard a lot of the complaint be around is Feldspar specifically, because it's very, so even as a compressed ore, Tritanium as minerals or Feldspar compressed is still high volume for the minerals you're getting. So just the amount of effort it takes to import Feldspar to get the Tritanium is like massive compared to some of the other minerals where you can get it from one specific ore that's compressed, and that can be like one jump freighter trip can be enough. So I mean, I guess in that sense you can see how maybe the bottleneck will be jump freighters, just in that you need to make like 10 jump freighter trips or something to get enough Feldspar to get the Tritanium you need. But I think that like only because it's Feldspar, not because it's an overall issue with having enough jump freighters, if that makes sense.
That's why I'm thinking, I forget who called out first, and I apologize for that, but whoever said, like, the Nullsec regions with easy access to HiSec, like, directly adjacent to HiSec as an example, are going to probably benefit from this, because one freighter is more than three times the one jump freighter. So as an example, like YMP, RC space, all you have to do is make sure there's a defense fleet in there for whenever we need to move a freighter through. And it doesn't even have to be like a proper defense fleet. It just, you just make sure local's clear and you made one jump in a freighter, and that saves you three jump freighter loads. And I feel like YMP, KBP as an example could like be industry powerhouses now in terms of like individual systems, just because you have that ability to just take one single jump. And now you have three times the ore that you would from a jump freighter. You just have to risk it for the biscuit.
For a low-cost solution is simply to have one Titan and lots of Kairos haulers. Same thing.
Yeah, I guess you could do that from LoSec too. Because you could bridge freighters from LoSec into Null. I don't know, does anybody know off the top of their head, is bridging freighters lower on fuel cost than jump freighters?
I don't believe it is, but I'm not really an expert in that kind of thing.
I'm trying to remember, back in the MC days, I know like our heaviest industry dudes in like Black Omega Security used to bridge their freighters around, but I don't know if that was because they just didn't have enough jump freighters, or like if that was a convenience thing or if it was a cost measure.
Well, I mean, even if it was slightly more costly, there are some reasons to do it. The increased capacity of freighters, the decreased risk. Regular freighter is a mere fraction of the price of a Tech 2 jump freighter. So if you could do it and you just like had Titans, you know, it's a lot more accessible. You can get more done.
I wonder if we see a commoditization of like you have a Keepstar route through LoSec at the HiSec. And just have people like selling their jump bridges on their Titans to bridge freighters through with ore. I 100% expect that to happen in the Imperium. They're going to have a Keepstar chain into HiSec from LoSec and bridge their people across. I mean,
maybe not
shoot,
Imperium, given that
you Legacy can result. Already do it. Yeah, that's true. Although with Legacy, from what I understand, it is more capitalist than like overseen by a large group. So I'd be surprised if they, like, that's the sort of thing where your alliance needs to say, okay, we need this infrastructure in place, we're going to have to place down these Keepstars, et cetera, et cetera. And, like, organize, because it's not worth it to keep your Titan basically mothballed in some low-set Keepstar just to bridge freighters if the freighters don't know to go use it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you need some serious volume of flow in order to make it worth it. The more I talk about this, the more I'm talking myself out of that it's a good idea.
But I do think you're onto something, which is that the regions bordering LoSec and Empire are now going to be much more valuable than before. They were always kind of valuable strategically, and they were always a good place to go get PvP. But now there is like a distinct economic advantage to being there, as opposed to the total safety of deeper NullSec, where a lot of the farming gets done.
The one wrinkle. And I could be way off in like the volumes of minerals you get from stuff is reprocessing modules, like loot that you get from running Anoms. I'm wondering if the loot that you get from running Anoms, reprocessing that, you will get minerals from it. You will get titanium from
you
it.
You will. You will.
I don't think
but
it
not
in anywhere
quantity.
Near the volume. Yeah.
No. Not even close. Especially for like shipbuilding. You could maybe get by manufacturing modules and ammunition that way.
This is where your MTUs come into it.
Fair enough.
But it's still not going to get the job done 100%. So let's bring this back to the metagame. What do we see this doing politically? What do we see this doing in terms of fleet metas? What's going to be the impact here? Your predictions.
T2 ships are definitely staying the meta. Like, they require fewer minerals to build, like a hack versus a battleship as an example. I think that's like hack metas for days. Throwaway Feroxes aren't going to be a thing. Throwaway Baltec fleets aren't going to be a thing, at least as much as they currently are.
Generally speaking, whelping ships in general or taking ships out just to lose them is going to be more discouraged because things are going to be in such short supply.
I'd be particularly curious for those entities of Nullsec that are really distant from Highsec. They're going to be reliant like an umbilical cord on having links with anyone kind of towards the core, and they could easily get cut off.
Could they easily get cut off, though? I don't know about that. A lot of the deep null guys are fairly powerful compared to the short null guys.
Well, I mean, is that just because historically deep null was the safest place to rat and mine because it's harder for hunters to access you? Whereas now the meta will shift, so will we see a migration of the more powerful people out of deep null?
It's certainly possible. I wouldn't expect it from like the fraternities, but the alliances that are more like rounded and less solely reliant on ratting for income and have more of a PvP base, I could easily see them migrating inward, which will mean pushing out some of the smaller guys. And then who knows what'll happen to the deeper Nullsec regions. I guess it'll be even more bot territory than it currently is.
Yeah, I mean, freaking drone lands, holy cow.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll see infrastructure migrate inwards, so Satoyus and whatnot, because let's face it, you want to have your manufacturing closest to the supply of minerals coming in from the core. But you're right, anything on the outside, unless you really just want to mine in peace out there and go for the Nullsec ores, it's basically bot territory.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it'll still be the best base to rat, right? It just won't be the best base to mine, necessarily, or at least to do industry. So I think
you could mine, but industry, I think, is the big one, isn't it? It's having all of your stuff next to each other so that you can very quickly get it into the shop and get it processed.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I think it lends itself to botting, because bots don't really need a lot to sustain themselves. Once they get their ship, whatever it is, they'll do their thing. Unless they get ganked, they're not really going to need another ship. So there's not much demand for industry, which means that'll probably populate that deep area. Which kind of sucks for everyone involved. Like, it's certainly a questionable from CCP's point of view, given all their focus on botting, that they're essentially driving players into one area and then like creating a bot paradise beyond that.
I'm not sure it would be a bot paradise beyond that. I think we might be stretching it a bit.
Yeah, I mean, because it'll still be the best area for people who are doing normal ratting as well, right? So not necessarily bots. It'll still be better if you're just a guy that likes to go out in your worm and that's how you make your isk. Like, that will still be better to do out in the farther regions, and if anything, maybe better, because now instead of targets being both miners and ratters in these densely populated pockets, it'll be maybe ratters only, and so there's going to be less targets in an area, and maybe that will disincentivize people from coming towards you more. So it could just be quieter in the future and still a better place for ratters as well, which I don't know if I would necessarily like that, but I don't know if I would say it's only going to be good for bots.
I mean, your analysis is correct, but my assumption is that if you're a player that just likes to rat a lot, you're still going to want an alliance around you for social stuff. You're still going to want to have other ships you can hop in and out of. You'll probably want to do other things than just rat. So unless it's like my alliance has a system in deep null that I can jump clone to, and like that's the only thing we do there, probably they're going to want to be more with the rest of their group. And that group will not sustain itself out with no indie. Sorry, get Artemis.
I'm not sure groups at that scale, like at the small to mid scale, are going to be bottlenecked by the volume of ore needing to be moved. It's just the people who are trying to pump out hundreds of supers, hundreds of capitals, thousands of subcaps. Those are the ones who are going to be bottlenecked by this, because previously that could be managed by a couple of dudes. Now that's going to need more than a couple of dudes. For the smaller corp, for the more mid-sized, or like the individual alliance in a larger coalition, it's just like they still have the capacity to manage those supply lines with their current people. It's not going to need much more expansion from them. Maybe I'm wrong there, but like for Noir is too small. If you consider maybe Fed Up, like the amount of ships they need to bring in and replace week over week, it's going to be more expensive, but I don't think they're going to hit a bottleneck in terms of capacity.
Entirely possible.
I would like to point out, I think just about everybody who reads through these notes just stops at the spreadsheets and misses the changes to gas sites. So, like, I'm not too up to date on the production of drugs, but it seems like a couple of the drug gas sites will be spawning less frequently. And then same thing with even wormhole sites, they're getting rebalanced. And then ice sites. This is the big one that I'm surprised more people aren't talking about. The probability of all ice sites spawning will decrease. So ice is going to decrease in supply. Fuel prices are going to be going up.
I'm not 100% sure about that, actually. Because with the core changes, you've got to imagine a lot of people who kind of put up structures for the hell of it are going to be taking theirs down. Or if they don't and don't core it up, they're going to be killed. So we may see a universe-wide drop in demand, and this is somewhat there to offset it.
I would probably disagree with you there. I think the core changes tell people to take down their structure spam, but the structure spam wasn't fueled to begin with. And so basically anything that's up there that the people are going to keep, they're fueling it month over month in order to keep it out of low power and abandonment. And based on that, like, of course, they're going to go stick a core in it. Like, a core is a one-time cost. Sure, it's a pretty hefty one-time cost, but if you're paying for fuel month over month, you're quickly going to pay more in fuel prices than you will in the core. Like, if it makes sense for you to fuel your structure, it makes sense for you to core your structure. And people are already fueling all their structures.
I don't know that that math is done by a lot of these people putting up, like, Rytaru's and HiSec and stuff. They want their own little structure, but now their own little structure, instead of costing them 500 mil, it's going to cost them like 2.5 mil. That is a huge jump for a lot of players and corporations that are outside of NullSec. We'll see. We shall see. There's also the low-sec ores we haven't really talked about. There's going to be low-sec exclusive ores, which means low-sec mining is going to wind up being a thing.
Well,
probably,
yeah.
I don't know, NullSec day trips or low-sec renters is my guess.
Well, again, this is very much going to benefit those alliances that maintain both a low and a null presence, since they can project in that area. NullSec regions that are distant from low-sec, for example, might find it more difficult to support that, particularly if they want to keep it under an umbrella.
Yeah. Well, interesting to say. I think certainly people would be more willing to use their supers in low, I would guess, because of the lack of bubbles. So we might see more
to kill them.
Stuff of that. Yeah, potentially. Then again, it could be so oppressive in terms of NullSec bringing their numbers into LowSec that it just squashes content. We have seen that with previous iterations of LowSec capital meta, where some groups having such massive superiority just drowns out the rest of the content because no one is willing to put anything on field. Speaking of the massive alliances with too many super capitals that know what to do with, let's give an update on World War B2. The war marches on. No conclusive ending yet by any stretch of the imagination. The big news, I guess, is that Legacy has taken a significant amount of Querius, just about all of it, I think, at this point.
Yeah, the only remaining systems with iHubs belonging to Goonswarm and the Imperium as a whole, as a result, are the ones that are, like, inside Delve. You have to cross through a system in Delve, be it NPC or Sov, in order to reach those systems in Querius.
This is significant because Initiative's pocket had been one of the major holdouts, and also Goons, they kind of had pretty much a trench line going down the middle of Querius, and now that is breached.
Yeah. If you're looking at the map, it's basically the western edge, the very, very western edge. There's two constellations in there, which still belong to the Imperium. But 79 iHubs belong to Pappy, and 16 iHubs belong to the Imperium currently.
Well, good news for the Imperium. The much-touted Legacy push into period basis is pretty much stalled.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, I don't think anyone was terribly surprised about that, but there was a lot of chest beating going on in various forums that they were going to surround and crush Goonswarm. Doesn't seem to be happening. Initiative has also fully retaken Fountain. Not that that's of much value to them, and probably won't be for a considerable period of time.
Yeah, but I think that it's important to note the clock is ticking on, like, when does Fountain become a viable escape route if need be? There was a lot of chest beating about, oh yeah, we'd love for them to start putting back up jump bridges, put up keep stars and Fountain again. But if that happens, well, now you've got to haul all your dudes back across the keep star chain, back into Fountain, and then while you're blazing Fountain again, well, what's going to happen in Quarius? I feel like it is there in a tricky spot if they let the clock tick down and suddenly the sovereignty, what's it called? Strategic index is high enough, or not strategic index, the SOV level gets high enough for the iHub upgrades so they can put in like jump bridges and so they can start anchoring keep stars if they want to. They
but
being
even if
the
they
Imperium.
Did, it really wouldn't be of much benefit to them. Like, you would probably want to keep those keep stars for a delve, I would think. Unless you are thinking they just, if they were to ever concede delve, they would have Fountain as a fallback point. But if they concede
that
delve, I think this war is effectively over.
It's also a massive morale victory. Like, because if you're a line member in the Imperium, you've been fed this narrative of, it's a floodplain. We'll let them wreck it and we'll rebuild. And so if we see, like before this war, before Delve has taken any major hits, that Fountain is rebuilding, that there are keep stars and jump bridges back up in Fountain again, and Pappy is still trying to take down Quarius, like if you're an Imperium line member who hasn't drunk the Kool-Aid yet, you're drinking the Kool-Aid.
Interesting.
Because it just confirms everything the leadership has been telling you, that it's a floodplain, we'll let them take it, it's not a big deal, we'll just rebuild, already replaced, we've got the money, we've got the wealth and the power, they can't actually touch us in Fortress Delve.
Well, I hadn't considered that angle, but actually that's pretty compelling.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would buy that. If they really can't push into Delve and they're just having no success there, I still think it would be hard for them to rebuild Fountain while the war is still going on.
It doesn't have to be a legitimate rebuilt in order to have the intended morale effect. All you've got to do is, yeah, it's a symbolic thing. If you've got jump bridges and a keep star, just even a keep star on that, on the gate next to Delve, so that you can say, yeah, we can shuttle our supers back and forth if we need to and start putting a super presence in that region. You don't even have to do it. You just have to have the ability to. And that's enough for the line members to drink the Kool-Aid.
Do you think they'd be able to get that infrastructure up at all, though? Like, if they were to try to anchor a new keep star in Fountain, do you think it would actually be able to go up?
It takes more than 24 hours for the Pappy super fleet to go through Iridia around into Fountain in order to set up to kill the, like, whatever they're anchoring. Anchoring timer on one of their keep stars is going to be 24 hours. It's going to take longer than that for the super fleet to move. And if the Imperium wants it up, they can just take their super fleet and be uncontested.
I mean, if they force Pandemic Legacy to split once again between Fountain and Quarius, that will itself be a massive victory for Imperium. So if the attackers wanted to contest, like seriously contest, I think the only way they would do it is itself kind of a win for Goonswarm. So they kind of win either way. Either they get the symbolic victory of the keep stars going up and Fountain being restored to its former glory and having withstood the tide, or they force material changes in the attack strategy for the attacking coalition that would force them to once again contest Fountain, which they just got done with, and would potentially allow Goonswarm to gain ground back in Quarius.
And it's worth noting, like, part of the reason I think Fountain was targeted in the first place, and part of the reason I think Pappy is currently comfortable just slowly working their way through Quarius is because they're killing tons and tons of infrastructure. There are citadels everywhere. There's faction forts that are like 6 out of the top 7 kills in the last week, faction forts in Quarius. So I think there's a lot of motivation there for the line members of Pappy to keep fighting the slog because there's loot to be had. They can kill these structures, they can get these kill mills, etc., etc. It feels like they're accomplishing something, killing literally a one-of-a-kind item. but if you go back to Fountain after it's been glazed, just to have to take down Sov and take down a keep star or two, that's a lot less rewarding for the line member.
You're making a good case, Artemis. I like it. We'll see what they do. Right now, though, I would say it's pretty difficult to frame this unless you're our good friend Brisk in any way other than test, PanFam, etc. Pretty much getting a distinct advantage in this war. Things have really been going their way lately. They haven't really had a major setback in recent weeks. So there is the question, of course, when shit goes down and there is a big Titan versus Titan brawl and all the coalitions put their cards on the table, who would in fact come out on top? We asked our audience, 100% Pandemic Legion and Legacy Coalition. So people are putting their money on the PanFam Legacy Super Fleet over Delves. What do they have? Two Super Fleets? Three Super Fleets? It would be quite the clash. But I have a feeling it's probably not going to happen. I think Goonswarm will hold on to the threat of it happening for as long as they can. By the time it gets to the point where they might want to consider actually using it, they will have lost too much ground and will then go, oh, well, you know, we're already losing. Let's just keep our super fleet intact and relocate it. That's the way I guess it's going to play out. But speaking of Delve, Noir returned for a one-week mini-contract. It was pretty much a continuation of our previous work down in World War B2 area. It was just short. We were brought in for a specific period of time, and then we were cut loose. So, we were in the same staging system, doing pretty much the same thing, but we definitely noticed an increase in resistance from Imperium forces. They were relentlessly gate camping the NPC systems in Delve to prevent exactly what we were trying to do and groups like us were trying to do, which is roam back and forth through their space, trying to move in ships, etc. They were also pretty good at like setting up traps and baits. Killed quite a few of our hunters that way. Super annoying.
Yeah.
Eh?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
I lost one Loki to bait.
Like, yeah, you did.
Like three bill, I want to say. Like, sure, they baited out one of my Lokis. Meh. I flew another one back from Amar, same night. Meh.
Well, they added up. It was one of our bloodiest contracts in quite a while. A little disappointed in our performance, to be honest with all the listeners out there. Not easy to admit, but we definitely did not live up to what we could have done in Hell. As the same contract, same area, we were there a couple weeks back. We did a lot better than we did this time around. Goonswarm really upped their game, provided us with a big challenge, and we adapted too slowly, and it cost us a lot of losses. At least that's my take on it. Andy, you were FCing quite a few fleets. Lave, you also did some like solo stuff. Do you guys want to weigh in there? Also, quick before we want to move on, I want to give a shout out to Sindraken Gorlin, who's probably the best solo pilot in the entire Imperium. That dude was ripping us apart. He is very good at what he does.
Yeah, I was going to say, so I think during the contract work was actually pretty busy for me, so I didn't really get there and do much until the very end. But we did run a bomber fleet, and we were able to successfully drop a Merm and I think maybe one other thing. But yeah, like you said, I think there was eyes at every single like pipe entrance. There were eyes, and people were docking up. Like I saw probably 3-4 people out in space that were docked up the second I hit local. So we did get like one target. We saw a couple potential targets and just couldn't get in position in time to get them before they were off grid and safed up. But at least when we were in bombers and everything, we didn't lose anything. So it was at least like a ISK efficiency wise was good. But yeah, we definitely didn't get as many kills that way as I was hoping.
I took a completely different approach to the most of Noir. So I grabbed two of my toons were in Lokis, two of my toons were in Scepters that I like had a mobile depot and a cloak. And so I would, of course, I work 60 hours a week. So I would wake up or pardon me. I'm also AUTZ. I work night shift. So I'd come home from work, sit down at my computer. All my toons were all logged into their systems, which were like high ratting numbers the night before. Kill a merm or two before they realized I was active again. Then combat probe all their MTUs, kill them. Swap over to my Scepter alts who were in two other systems, see if anybody was in local with them. Maybe roam the Scepter a jump or two, look for other easy targets. If they were, move the Lokis over, kill them. And then wait for downtime to hit, log the toons back in, go to bed. And doing that, I was the top killer for the contract. I didn't count up all of my kills. I should probably have done that. While somebody else is talking, I'll do the math, but yeah, I mean, in my opinion, like the way that I saw this contract, we have a coalition of 30,000 characters, all of whom want ISK. They got a Plex, they're fighting a war, they're losing ships. Sure, there's SRP, but they want their ISK. And there are already Cloaky campers in the region, so they're already used to just doing their thing even when there's a hostile and local. So I just be another one of the Cloaky campers who can also just decloak and kill them. I don't have to have dudes behind a Blobs bridge because my Lokis were the standard like ham fit Lokis. I could just kill them myself, and I found great success doing so.
I took a approach on the basis that I had very little time due to real life. I found a lot, we were sometimes trying to chase the gang fights, and the problem is when you try and gang fight against a Blob, they do what the Blobs tend to do and they Blob. And that's not really that conducive to high efficiency tradings. And it's better just to not give them the satisfaction in those cases. So I eventually had a transition to a more kind of, basically a case of there's always that small volume traffic that moves through that thinks it can't be caught. And one of my things is ensuring I can catch it. So I'll often catch people, who don't think they can be caught and then put them to the sword and then get out before the police arrive.
I think in general we took a lot of risky trades and fights. I was on two. One, the first one, I really feel like I was derelict in my duty of telling people their ideas are bad. Because it was a pretty knife's edge fight that these guys wanted to take, where there was a Imperium gate camp fairly spread out. There was a plan on paper to deal with everything they had, but the execution just was not there, and it really needed to be flawless in order to work. And I probably should have said, hey, too risky, let's just not do this, let's go roam instead. But we took it, and it cost us a Deimos as well as one or two smaller ships. And then later, we took a ratting merm, and some response fleets landed. And it's just so frustrating. The merm escaped with like barely any hull, but it managed to get out. And we're fighting the response fleet. The response fleet is super takeable, but for some reason, ships that should be kiting at point range are like on top at scram range and are getting scram webbed and dying left and right. All of a sudden, we don't have the DPS. It's like, oh, god damn it. And it was literally knife's edge. We had killed the one thing if that one ship hadn't charged this Gnosis instead of orbiting 20, then we would have been in great shape. But that's not the way it went down, and so we fed bad. We did get some good fights, though. There was one I remember in particular. We were fighting a small group of Imperium folks. It was like a mix of I think it was mostly Goonswarm. There might have been some initiative in there. I forget. But we had jumped into this system that was covered in bubbles. And there was a Caracal sitting there. There was a Jaguar and a Hurricane. And we were in like four or five Crows. Or no, it was two Crows, an Imperial Navy Slicer, and I think an Assault Frigate. Like a Retribution, something along those lines. Well, we went right on the Caracal, caught it out. It dropped pretty fast. I think he was like in deep shield before he even knew what was happening and started fighting back. So we took him out, but the cane was a big problem. It was commanding the space within those bubbles. Our slicer went down to the Caracal just before we killed it because it was taking too much damage and it couldn't get outside the bubble edge in time. This was a very, very large area. And so we began the fun game of fighting this cane while trying to dodge the Jaguar. And the cane is thick. He is a thick boy. And we have interceptor level damage. So we're like shooting him. His autocannons are tracking us, but not that great. He's got warriors out. They're hitting pretty hard. And we have to keep handing off point over and over and over again between the three of us. But we are wearing him down. He is like in deep armor, about to hit structure. And then there's a local spike behind us. A big slice gang comes through. So we have to book it out of there. Well, half of us are like in low armor already, no way to rev it back kind of thing. And we warp off. But Slice did us the favor and finished off the cane before they left. So cheers to those guys. But it was like a big, like, it felt long. I want to say it was like a 15-minute fight. It might not have been quite that long, but it felt long. A lot of fun. This is our first major fight with our new corp recruit, Echelon. Excuse me, our new alliance recruit, Echelon, from Marunmore. He's their CEO. He was the slicer. Performed admirably. And really positive attitude throughout the whole thing, which is cool. All right, moving on. We're supposed to do a campaign almost as soon as we got done with Dell, but it got put on the back burner. So we took a little time to R&R. We picked up some recruits, did a little grinding, a little fun roams, and then we got the green light. And then we started our new campaign. If you remember from a couple episodes ago, we talked about the HiSec Poco cartel and the war that the Rogue Consortium was having with Omega and friends. It's back on. I guess, and technically speaking, it never really stopped. Just a lot of the main alliances stopped participating in it for a little while. But it's back now, and we just hit up several of their systems so far. So it's going well for us. There was a fleet earlier today where Black Flag showed up with Omega. They brought a pretty nice Cerberus fleet with a very, very healthy wing of logistics to back up, what was it, like 8 remote repping Tengus from Omega Friends and Omega Media Lab and Friends, or whatever the fuck he's called. They repped that Poco mighty quick while we were already mid-route to reship. So they're like, ooh, should we go back? Should we finish? And by the time we figured that out, actually did reship, came all the way back. They had managed to save one Poco, but we wiped the others.
Yeah, I saw this hit the kill board, and I was like, oh, nice, we're off to a good start. Fortunately, I couldn't be there for the Poco kills, but it looked like everyone was doing good, and it was nice to see people in comms for that.
We had a really good EUTZ fleet.
Yeah, EU Prime, 16 in fleet. Pretty swanky. Now, some of the Nor Academy guys, obviously, they're not flying Lushaks and Balgorns, but pretty much everybody else was. And, you know, folks that couldn't, we found excellent uses for them. Had a couple contingencies prepared, depending on what they wanted to do. And we didn't actually come to blows with that fleet. A Rogue Consortium fleet of Hurricanes took them on first and forced them off. But we were, like, a few jumps away from being in that fight. Kind of wish they'd waited, but I guess it wouldn't really made a difference. Like, we were in battleships, Black Flag is in hacks. They could just kite us out anyway. But it would have been fun. I'm sure we'll get plenty of other opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, this thing's still just starting to go, right? Like, we're not even close to the end of this. So
this is not even the end of the first day.
Also had a nice fleet last night, just, you know, reoing all the Pocos in the system. Did we already talk about that? Was I arguing with Andy and not paying attention?
I think we've covered it.
Okay, well, never mind.
Let's move on to our next story. Triglavian conquered systems. What's going to happen to them? Something, apparently.
Yeah, just today, while we were in the fleet killing Pocos, I get another spam email from the Triglavians. They now have like a schematic, like a blueprint drawing of a Stargate, and then the audio is just like a ticking clock in the background. And of course, like on Hobo Leaks for who knows how long, there've been all the text strings and stuff about gates being shut down. Forebodingly in the, which update was it? I think it was the Zenith update. They say that you should pick a side and move your stuff out of any system which is currently conquered by the Trigs. And so, of course, after that, a bunch of people went and put more stuff into the systems conquered by the Trigs just to see what would happen. But suffice it to say, CCP is... They don't tell us what's going to happen, but they say something is definitely going to happen, and they're hinting very strongly at something's going to happen specifically to the Stargates.
Now, the Stargates being totally shut off makes sense. You just know that those systems are still going to be accessible, though, likely by wormholes, I would assume. There's also potentially talk of some other kind of gate mechanic to get in, like maybe all the Triglavian systems are connected to each other, something along those lines, which either way would be super interesting.
To quote the thing, in further news, EdenCom has released a statement urging all Capsuleers who currently live in systems conquered by Triglavian forces to relocate and find a new home immediately.
Which is cool, except the one Triglavian system we actually have stuff in is basically inaccessible, because as soon as you go outside the station or on the gates, they pop you instantly. It's fucking annoying. It's one Basilisk I'm never going to get back.
Just spin up an alt, give him positive trig standings. There you go.
I would just go get positive trig standings myself. Then I can't go into the EdenCom systems, and they're more common in ISEC.
Ah, choices matter.
Indeed. I'm going to stay neutral till I can't no more. It's not like the ships will be like gone. I assume I'll have some way to get into Tasey at some point in the future. Just grab them then.
I think the true problem here is the lack of capitalist fervor in the Triglavians and the EdenCom. Because, like, why can't we buy tags for standings yet? I mean, come on, guys. Just freaking rub some pennies together, and there you go. Let's grease some palms, make it happen.
I think the other thing that I've commented before the show is I wonder if CCP may do something about the Niagara bottleneck, given that Niagara is the shortest route between Amar and Geet, and I wonder if they might reroute a Stargate to kind of bypass that, given that the current route from Geet to Amar, taking just high sec, is insane.
It's to the point now that I'm moving my stuff out of Geet into Amar. Like, we live in Pravi now. Amar's got better prices on things than Geet in a lot of situations now. Because, like, if you think about the industrial powerhouses, the Imperium and Legacy, both in the south. I mean, sure, you've got Frat and whatever up north, but they're currently deployed down south. So the majority of, like, the Nullsec stuff that does make it to HiSec is coming from the south anyway. I think Amar's where it's at. I love how everybody was like, oh, Amar's dead now because it's cut off. But I think Amar has just found a resurgence.
More updates. The Rolling Thunder. Kind of an underwhelming update in my view, but I know, Lave, you are quite happy about it.
Happy is one way of putting it. I mean, they gave some buffs to the EdenCom ships to increase their accuracy, i.e. making speed less of a mitigation factor, and they increased the damage of the small and mid variants, and also gave the small one, the small projectors, a range increase. So now you can have Skybreakers hitting out to 55 kilometers, and the Stormbringers can push past 100 kilometers. And the DPS is now actually not inconsequential, but it's still a very odd ship. I haven't quite figured out where it fits in, though. I do know there are a couple of meme and very specialized fits in which these things do well. Artemis?
I was going to say, one of those meme fits is it was confirmed they are like kings of Electrical Abyss now.
Oh, yeah. So that is an issue for them.
Just like the cap bonuses to their cap recharge and the damage types that the projectors do. Electrical abyssal sites, you just cheese them and you can do damage to everything. The only barrier is like the heavy battleship waves. You struggle in the heavy battleship waves.
I have no idea how you would break those in one of these ships. Their DPS against a single target is abysmal.
It did just get significantly buffed.
That much, though?
But you also got to remember you're going through the resist holes, too. And, like, if you think about it, Alec, my... well, bad example. I was going to say my triple hawks, but my triple hawks do 700 DPS together. So, yeah, never mind.
Yeah, the single target damage is always a bit underwhelming, but as you say, it's the fact that it fires into a wave and just does it. And the short range ammunition for a Stormbringer still pushes 33 kilometers, which is not inconsequential. But we also had a slight buff to change the faxes, mainly the faxes that lost bonuses now have some bonuses back. So that being the Nanazu and the Lif, I think it is, which now get a cap boost amount bonus on their one allowed cap boosters. It gives them a bonus they lost previously. And then the Blop ships got extra fuel bay, and they gained semi T2 resistances to what would typically be their enemies. So the Mimitars got even better at EM and thermal resistances, because that's what a Mar tends to do. The Marians got kinetic and explosive. The Caldari and Galente got various mixes of kinetic and thermal, and the Marshal just got even more powerful. I'm obviously happier that the Blops have a little bit more deep EHP, but we're talking, what, 5, 6k EHP here, you know, for decent fits. And I still think they missed the trick here in dealing with some of the more useless bonuses on Blop ships, you know, particularly taking the cloak bonus, just making it a roll bonus, and giving them some bonuses that stand them out and actually allow them to be on the field rather than just bridging platforms.
I am surprised at the lack of people talking about how this impacts tanky Sinos. T2 resists on Blop ships, which are the tankiest ships that you can light a Sino with. I haven't checked to see yet. In fact, I don't even know if Pypha's got a version out with the resist changes, but
yes.
How much would it take to volley a Redeemer Sino now? Can you legitimately have like Perma Sinos under fax reps?
I don't think the resist buff was that significant.
No, it was small.
Okay.
It's more of a tweak than really a revolutionary change of the class.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've discussed it on the internal Discord as well, but I personally would have given Blops, you know, some extra bonus itself, you know, such as like an E-War resistance bonus itself to make them slippery. So you can drop it in and not be affected as much by TDs, by webs, for example, so that if you need to get out, you can do so while still deploying your one biller ship, though a carrier will always be more cost effective.
I think there's still a need for fax to be unique, or excuse me, for blobs to be unique. I want to see them have an on-a-field role that isn't filled by bombers, isn't filled by recons, isn't filled by like logistics tech threes. Or maybe it does a little bit of everything, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the discussion we ended up having on our Discord when the changes got announced, is that it feels like Blops, the changes are nice and they're definitely welcome, but it still doesn't feel like Blops fill a role that isn't filled by something else other than just literally being able to bridge.
Yeah, and that's not an on-field thing unless they make a change where that has to come with, which, honestly, that might be a nice change for all the bridges.
I can't imagine them actually like putting that into the game, though. There would be so many people who are upset.
They never would, but I would love to see it. The bridge is longer duration, but you jump at the end of it. Asakai. Asakai everywhere. Well, we'll see. I don't think this really revolutionizes Black Ops in any meaningful way, but I could always be wrong. I do think for those folks that do run full Black Ops fleets for drops, this of course makes you more more viable and more survivable, but I don't think it really changes the math on that terribly much.
There's also the folks who do Black Ops pipe bombing who have been buffed significantly by this.
That's true. Although overall, I would say if you weren't doing it before, the buffs are not so big that you would try it now. But if you're already doing it, you're going to have an easier time. That's how I would describe it.
Yeah, and if anyone who's doing Black Ops has a fact halt, because let's face it, if you can drop over a billion on a battleship, which you're going to have nice and pimped up, you're going to have a fax halt.
All right, moving on to some host highlights. Mine's a short one and honestly pretty stupid. But I took the R&R period to stock up on PvE ships for Providence. I don't really do a lot of PvE, but I have had occasions because I qualified for gold in League of Legends for the split. So I'm going to get the skin, which is what I really wanted. So now I'm not playing League of Legends as much. So I am having periods of time late at night where there's like no one else on. I don't feel like going out and soloing. I just want to like fuck around for 30 minutes. What could I do? I didn't really have any ships for it. So I brought up a Abyssal Gila. I brought up a Endurance for ice mining, and I brought up a Curse for ratting. Yes, that's right, a curse. I wanted to see if it could be done. And it can. Very slowly.
Sounds painful, yeah.
The best DPS I found on one of those ships is a Rook with Hams. But in EM territory, like against Sancha or whatnot, it's just painful.
I mean, you can break all the battleships with it. You do have to manage your drones a little bit. You can't fully AFK or see what'll happen is they'll split their fire. And in that case, you do not have the DPS to break some of the battleships. So it can't be totally AFK like I expected, but it's tanking perfectly fine. The de-scanned immunity is a nice little touch, and that was what attracted me to it in the first place. Like, you don't have to watch local as closely, because no one knows you're out. But I'm sure that'll burn me one day, and when it does, I probably will not replace it, because the ticks suck anywhere between 4 to 9 mil, which is just awful. But, you know, it's a little bit of money, it's a little bit of security status, it's something I can do casually when I usually don't play Eve casually, so whatevs. I'll probably do a more respectable like VNI or Ishtar or something like that fit in the future.
It is still my opinion that if you don't have all day to AFK rat and you just have 30 minutes or an hour, Abyssals is the way to go. You're going to make so much more ISK. You can get it down to like watching Netflix at the same time. Sure, it still requires a little bit more attentiveness than
a little
AFK ratting. Yeah, a little. Like, freaking Gila Abyssal stuff, if you're doing the T4s or whatever and the passive fit, like, it's pretty chill. Even my Hawks, I'll watch Netflix while I'm doing them now. Just because it's, you know, the rooms, you just lock up and shoot. Basically, you'll spawn into a room, you'll know, okay, I need to primary this first. Then once that's down, it's just, yeah, let the missiles do their thing. Sure, you've got to manually lock all your targets, but you can manually lock all the targets while watching Netflix on the other screen. That's not a hard thing to do.
I mean, just the micromanagement of your drones alone, I don't know how that would work.
The Gila drones are tanky enough that you really don't have to, depending on the situation. And I guess with me in the Hawks, I'm not micromanaging drones. I'm just clicking three buttons for every time you would click one, because I have to do all three accounts. But it is very much not a thing I have to pay much attention to.
I'll try it, for sure. I'll try it. I haven't tested the Gila yet. I'm sure it's going to do fine. I'm running T4s with it.
And the ISK is insane. Like, absolutely insane. If you do what I do in triple box Hawks, you're making 600 mil an hour, which is like 200 mil an hour per character.
Gotta export it, though, is my only frustration with that. You gotta factor in the time it takes to move and sell all that stuff into the ISK per hour.
The loot is absolutely tiny, and you could do it anywhere, too. Like, for me, I just got my clones back in Perimeter in the Keepstar. And so I just head back there, do the thing, and then I can Death Clone back whenever I need to, or Scepter back. It doesn't really matter.
Nah, I didn't want to leave, probably. I want to be able to pivot to PvP at a moment's notice.
Yeah, you can do that too. In which case, I would say the loot, like, you'd fill up a Prowler and maybe... I don't know how many sites it would take. It'd take a lot of sites to fill up a Prowler.
Well, I do run Jump Freighters back and forth, so definitely potential there. Speaking of things, if you are an ice miner in the Providence area, check the market. There are very competitive buy orders for your wares. I want those mats. Gimme! We were doing pretty good at filling all the planetary infrastructure buys. Shoutouts to Artemis, shoutouts to ZTN, shoutouts to BAM. Kravma is also pulling down mad numbers on PI. But ice mining in Providence, still a little slow, still the bottleneck. So we're looking for strontium, we're looking for topes, etc. So if you're listening to this and that's you, come be part of our gas station in Pravi. Artemis?
Oh, the gas station? We've fallen so far. Or rather, Pravi has fallen so far. My highlight is obviously being top killer in the contract for Delve. It was 1 week. 5 of those 7 days, I was working 12 hours a day. So, super proud to be able to have the top kill numbers even with my limited playtime. It's been a while. I'm back on top.
Leave?
My limited playtime. I pretty much enjoyed getting in on the dev week and playing Killboard Hall for that day and making my Killboard look very padded.
Some good butter kills, man. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, although to be fair, there's still at least one or two super caps and 3 raw calls that for some, I think someone got a kill mail and for some reason it isn't like the Z kill, so we'll never see those again.
Andy?
Yeah, so this is a little bit late, but my highlight was passing 1 trillion is killed. So that happened actually before we recorded our last episode. That happened, but I was too excited by the Titan kill to realize that it had happened earlier that week. So yeah, it's my, I don't think it came from any like certain kill. It was actually prior to the Titan, but it just felt good to finally pass 1 trillion is killed.
For shout outs, I want to give a shout out to ZTN. He donated a tremendous amount of money to get us sorted on cores. Thank you, mate. And in general, I want to give him props for being one of the most active members of the corp outside of like on field stuff. He is constantly like doing graphics work for us. This core donation, he's just a tremendous asset, whether he's in fleet or not. Really terrific dude. And I want to thank him for his generosity, both with his money and his time. Artemis?
Well, now I kind of want to give a shout out to ZTAN, but I guess I'll stick with my initial shout out, which is to CCP for this ore redistribution thing. Shout out to you guys for sticking to your guns. I know a lot of people were complaining that the CSM only heard about it a week in advance and weren't given any input. And CCP, thank you for that. Thank you for not letting all of the freaking null blocks on the CSM change your mind.
Leave.
And this is a bit of a weird shout out, but recently, one of the main ways we keep in touch is with Discord. And it's a shout out to Kaput, one of the old MCFCs. Pretty cantankerous in some respects, but I'd say he's, like a lot of people, including present company, who are kind of going through life, going through milestones, settling down. And it's really just to kind of give them a shout out and say, thanks for all the good times and hope things are well.
Andy?
Yeah, I just wanted to give a shout out to our EU dudes. We talked about how we had a great fleet with good numbers earlier today. We have our 2 new recruits that are both in EU, so I just wanted to give them a shout out for making that happen. I talked to actually, I think, both of the recruits before they actually went on their recruitment rooms. And then basically just asked one of the EU dudes to take him out, and both of them were handled like the next day. They had a recruitment roam up and were roaming with the potential guys that ended up joining. So I just want to say thanks for being so responsive, and I'm excited to see what EU does.
Well, that's it, guys. Head to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the show poll. As I said, we are recruiting. Can use a few more good mercs. You can join Cafe Noir in CafeNoir.in-game for more info, including a link to our Discord. I also want to shout out our Patreon, patreon.com/DOW. And you can also find our swag on Redbubble now. There's a link at declarationsofwar.com to go buy some shirts.
I can't believe it. We definitely didn't talk about our swag. Our first swag items arrived.
You know, we should before we close it out. I think we owe that. So Artemis and I bought a shit ton of our own merch from Redbubble. I'm going to write it off as a quality test, Artemis. I don't know about you, but that seems appropriate. We got to make sure that our listeners are getting quality merchandise, or, you know, what kind of hosts would we be if we offered them substandard wares? So I think we both ordered like $180 worth of shit. Go for it.
I got a bunch of t-shirts because I'm a t-shirt person. So I got a Declarations of War t-shirt, the classic Declarations of War t-shirt in black. And then I got a white noir logo t-shirt. Alec was kind enough to adjust one of the designs per my request. And I think it looks much better now. Thank you.
I agree. I just didn't think of it.
And then I also got a throw blanket. I got the largest of the throw blankets. What else did I get? I'm missing an item. Well, I looked this up. What'd you get, Alec?
So I too got the throw blanket. I got the largest one I could because I had the idea of using it as a pseudo comforter for my bed. And it both fits, looks great, and it's so soft and fuzzy. Was not anticipating the softness. So I'm very anxious for summer to be over so I can start using this thing. I also got a Noir logo t-shirt. Haven't worn it yet because it's got 3/4 sleeves and it's been super hot out, but it looks great and feels great. I got a piece of art. It's the Noir Alliance logo and kind of like a wood frame block, and it is hanging up in my apartment and looks fucking fantastic. It's covering up a place where I assume my previous resident had a piece of art there. They're like two screws popping out, perfectly level. So I just hung it right there, and it looks great. I also ordered a Alliance logo mask. All my stuff was Noir Alliance logo, because I already have a ton of Declarations of War shirts and stuff from the previous run we did. So I used this time to get more Alliance logo stuff, which is cool. So I got our Corp logo on a mask. Looks so good. What else did I get?
I found out my missing item was my girlfriend got she liked the Noir logo better than the Declarations of War logo. And so she got a Noir logo on the black V-neck shirt.
Oh, very nice. Is that the one with the black bar on the top?
No, she would just like a regular black t-shirt and then the white Noir logo on it. She liked that it popped out.
Ah, drats. My brain is failing me. There was one other thing that I got, but I also recall it being quite nice. But yeah, the winners for me are the throw blanket, the mask, and the wood block. And the shirt is... Oh, that's right. I'm looking at it right now. I got a throw pillow for a... For a couch.
Oh.
With the Noir logo, it's big and buffed up, so it doesn't have the name on it, but it just has the figure with the blood splatter super big. It looks awesome. It's pretty soft. I have definitely fallen asleep on it already. So
I was thinking about getting the big floor pillow. There's a Declarations of War floor pillow, which is like a throw pillow, but 4 times or 5 times bigger. I was thinking about grabbing one of those.
That's certainly fascinating. That store is dangerous, man. There's so much cool stuff there. Like the shower curtain, I'm probably going to get at some point. I just don't know whether I'm going to get a Declarations of War one or a Noir logo one. But it's going to happen.
You got to get the Noir one. That way, at some point, your fiance, soon to be wife, comes into the bathroom when it's dark and just sees the silhouette with the gun holding out and scares her to death. 100%. Install it without telling her a word.
Ooh. Oh, it's tempting. It's tempting.
All right. We've done enough rambling about our own merch.
Yeah. But anyway, go check it out. It's quite cool. I think it's redbubble.com/people/Alexeyev should take you where you need to go. And like I said, there's also links on our on declarationsword.com, so you can check it out. Wide variety of items. There's like literally dozens of different products you can get our logo on. And we are going to be uploading new designs as we go. Hopefully one every month, every other month, something like that. But if you like what you see, please pick it up, help support the show, and most importantly, help support your own sense of style, because they look damn good. And with that, wherever you are, hopefully not stuck in a Triglavian system, good hunting, listeners.